Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvochim Daf Samach. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The Gemara with which today's shiur will be commencing is found 6 lines from the top of Daf Samach, and in fact we find ourselves in the middle of a discussion. For a brief recap, we saw a machloikis Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda with regard to dimensions concerning the Mizbeach of Moshe Rabbeinu. We saw, according to Rabbi Yehuda, for example, the Mizbeach of Moshe Rabbeinu measured on the top 10 by 10, and the height, according to Rabbi Yehuda, was 3 amos. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, Moshe Rabbeinu's Mizbeach measured 5 by 5 on the top, leaving a Mokom Hamarocha of only 1 amo. As a result of these two opinions, we had different approaches to understanding what Shlomo HaMelech did in the time of the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash that he was responsible for building. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we saw that in order to offer the 22,000 sacrifices that were offered on the day of dedication, it was necessary for Shlomo HaMelech to dedicate or to sanctify the floor of the Beis HaMikdash in order to serve as a contingency Mizbeach. According to Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, the Mizbeach that Shlomo HaMelech built was sufficient for handling the 22,000 korbanos. With all of this background in mind, we continue our discussion. Of course, the recommendation is to have learned Daf Nun Tes in order to appreciate this continuation of Gemara. Bishlamo the Rabbi Yehuda that said, Bishlamo means things work out well according to Rabbi Yehuda, that said the Mizbeach of Shlomo was only 11 times greater than the Mizbeach of Moshe. Hainu dichtiv kidesh. With that I understand that there was a necessity of offering sanctifying the floor of the Azorah, the Ritzvah Azorah. As we mentioned a moment ago, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Shlomo HaMelech Mizbeach was only 11 times greater than the Mizbeach Nechoshes of Moshe Rabbeinu. If on the Mizbeach of Moshe Rabbeinu we saw a pasuk indicating that 1,000 korbanos were able to be offered on a given day, the Mizbeach of Shlomo being 11 times greater would account for only 11,000 korbanos. But we know that he had a need to offer 22,000 korbanos on the day of dedication. Therefore, there was a need to sanctify the floor with the Kedushas Mizbeach. Elo, the Rabbi Yossi. But according to Rabbi Yossi, who we saw in our previous sukkah, accounted for a Shlomo Mizbeach that was 400 times greater in size than the Mizbeach of Moshe Rabbeinu, my Kidesh. What is the reference to sanctification? It seemed that there was a sanctification of the floor of the Azorah, but for what purpose? Answer, Lahamid Ba Mizbeach, to render it fit, to make it fit for hosting the Mizbeach. So there was a need for sanctifying the floor in order to position a Mizbeach on it. Bishlamo Rabbi Yossi. Now the Gemara takes the opposite approach and says things would work out well according to Rabbi Yossi, that says that the Mizbeach of Moshe Rabbeinu of Shlomo was quite a bit larger than the Moshe Mizbeach. Hainu dichtiv katon. Therefore, the word katon which seems to be stated with regard to the Mizbech of Moshe Rabbeinu is has meaning to it, that the Mizbech of Moshe was small. Granted, given that the Mizbech of Shlomo was 400 times larger, so that the word Kotan is appropriate to in describing the Moshe Rabbeinu Mizbech. Of course, when we're referring to the Pasuk that was cited on Daf Nun Tes Omid Aleph at the bottom of the page. This is a reference to a Pasuk in Melachim Aleph, Periches, Pasuk Samach Dalet. Elo, the Rabbi Yehuda, my Kotan. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, that said that they needed to sanctify the entire floor because the Shlomo Mizbech was also Kotan, was also small. What's the point of the word Kotan with regard to the Mizbech of Nechoshes of Moshe Rabbeinu, the copper Mizbech of Moshe? Hochi Ka'omar. So with regard to Rabbi Yehuda, the Pasuk is to be understood as follows, and we're going to weave in the word Kotan to this new understanding. Hochi Komar, Mizbech Avonim She'osa Shlomo Tachas Mizbech HaNechoshes Kotan Havei. The Mizbech Avonim, the stone Mizbech that Shlomo HaMelech made in place of the Mizbech HaNechoshes of Moshe, was small. The pronoun here, it was small, is a reference back to the Mizbech Avonim was small. And therefore, as according to Rabbi Yehuda's Pshat, there was a need to sanctify the floor, being that the Mizbech Avonim of Shlomo was itself too small to handle the 22,000 korbanos. B'mai pligi, what's the underlying root of controversy between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi? Mar Sovar, Rabbi Yehuda holds, Donin Chutz Michutz. We saw that Rabbi Yehuda had a gzeirah shavah running between the Mizbeach of Moshe Rabbeinu and the Mizbeach in Yecheskel. These were two structures positioned b'chutz. Chutz means in the courtyard. And I prefer to learn two chutz elements, namely the Mizbeach Nechoshes from the Mizbeach in Yecheskel, and not learn the Ein Donen Chutz Mipnim, and not to learn the gzeirah shavah that we, of course, made reference to on Daf Nun Tes, and not to learn, like Rabbi Yossi did, Chutz the Mizbech Nechoshes from the Mizbech Hazov that was Pifnim in the Heichal. Omar Sava Rabbi Yossi, who in fact learned the Mizbech Moshe of Moshe from the Mizbech of the Heichal, Donin Kli Mikli, the Ein Donin Kli Mibinyon. He prefers to learn ideas of vessels from vessels. In other words, according to Rabbi Yossi, the emphasis on likeness is on not location, like Rabbi Yehuda said, but rather on the item. They were both vessels as opposed to structure. The Mizbech of Nechoshes was a vessel, not a structure. And that was learned from the Mizbech Hazov, which also was a vessel. And Rabbi Yossi says, I would prefer learning vessel from vessel than learning vessel, meaning the Mizbech HaNechoshes, from a binyan, a structure. That was the altar in Sefer Yecheskel. It was built of stone as a structure. Omar Rava. We're about to start a long point, and you'll notice we have a long point indicator to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a nun that's encircled with a vertical dashed line, indicating that all the lines of Gemara that are opposite this vertical dashed line form a point. And before we embark on the long point, let us glance at the outside margin. You'll notice a nosei, which represents a topic heading. Lefi Rava, according to Rava, afal pi de Rabbi Yehuda, haritzpa mikudeshes kimizbeach, even though the floor was sanctified with altar status, with mizbeach status, hainu rak leinyan haktoras emurim. That's only with regard to the offering up or the burning of the innards of the sacrifices. Avolagabi zrikas hadam, but with regard to the blood sprinkling, moide Rabbi Yehuda de bo'inon mizbeach. Rabbi Yehuda agrees that for the purpose of blood sprinkling, you need an actual altar, and one cannot rely on the fact that the floor had received mizbeach status. Turning to the Gemara, Omar Rava, moide Rabbi Yehuda bedamim. Rabbi Yehuda concedes that even though the floor has the sanctity of the Mizbeach, nevertheless, that's only with regard to the Haktoras Emurim, but not with regard to Zrikas Adam, the blood sprinkling. Desanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. This is a source that describes what took place on the 14th of Nisan when there were many, many thousands of Korban Pesachs offered on that day. There was a possibility that blood had spilled out from one of the Mizrakis, one of the receptacle receiving vessels for receiving the dam, and being that the blood spilled out, so Zrikas Adam from that particular Korban wasn't fulfilled. So there was a solution that's featured over here. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kois Echod Hoya Memale Midam Hataruvos. They would fill up a vessel, a kos, literally a cup of blood from the mixed bloods of all the different Korban Pesach sacrifices. And after gathering up a cup of blood from the floor, Vishovcho al Gabi Mizbeach, and they would then pour it out on the altar to accomplish the equivalent of Zrikas Adam, in this case by Korban Pesach, Shvichas Adam, on the Mizbeach. Sheim Yishpoch Domo Shel Achas Mehem, that if it would have happened that one of the Korban Pesach bloods had spilled out, Nimtza Zeh Machshiro, then this action will serve to Machshir, to enable that korban to be acceptable. Ve'i salka daitoch sover bihuda kula azora mikdisha. If you were to think that Rabbi Yehuda holds that the entire floor of the courtyard had altar sanctity, ha is avido le mitzvase, then the mitzvah was already accomplished. In other words, there would have been no need to gather up spilled blood, because when the blood spilled onto the floor, if you hold that the floor has altar status, so then the mitzvah was performed. So what need was there for them to do this? What which it said in the source of, they were memale, kos echod hoya memale midam hataruvos. There would be no need for that. It would have already been accomplished. So with this, we conclude the point that this shows us. The Rabbi Yehuda was modeh, conceded that with regard to blood, the floor does not really have mizbeach status. However, the discussion continues, and we notice a geometric form, one of our series indicators. In this case, it's going to be used as a ma'akav. You can see in our outside margin, the mivneh heading, you have a trapezoid, or sometimes we term it the volcano form, the ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a back and forth discussion. So with the narrow part facing upwards, this will be a kushya, a question. With the narrow part facing downwards, tshuva, a response. So when we get to the end of this little back and forth discussion, it just lasts a couple of lines. You'll notice a few lines later there's a slash mark in the middle of the line where there's a little gimel next to a bracket, which will indicate that at that point we've reached the end of the sugya. You will notice, though, that the last marking before that slash is the trapezoid with the narrow part facing up, which represents a question. In other words, we've made a point, we're going to raise a question. That's the point of the Gemara that we're going to start now. We're then going to offer a response, but then raise a question, indicating that by the end of this discussion, there we will be left with a question on the long point that was just made. So let's just recap. We have established till this point that Rabbi Yehuda concedes that even though he holds that the floor has altar status, that's only insofar as the offering of the burning of the innards of korbanos. But as far as blood applications are concerned, what we call Zrikas Adam or Shvichas Adam, that cannot be accomplished by the floor, but rather you have to have an actual mizbeach. And this was proven by the fact that they had to scoop up blood from the floor and apply it to the mizbeach, indicating that the fact that it spilled onto the floor shows that the floor does not have altar status with regard to blood application. The Gemara asks, "V'dilma mishum dekasavar shvicha mikoyach ha'adam bo'inan." Maybe the floor really does have altar status with regard to blood as well. You'll ask, then, why did they scoop up the blood from the floor? Well, that's because the spilled blood that we had been taking into consideration was exactly that. It merely spilled. It wasn't poured by a person. But if a person poured the blood, that's what this expression means, shvicha mikoyach ha'adam, bo'inon. Bo'inon is we require. If spilling by means of human strength, human force, it would have been done, if a person would spill the sacrificial blood onto the floor, that might have been sufficient. So that you don't necessarily need a mizbeach even with regard to the blood application. And we're saying all of this within Shitas Reb Yehuda. So how can Rava claim that Reb Yehuda concedes with regard to blood that you need an altar? Maybe you don't. The Gemara responds, Im Kain Nishkele V'Nishpech Le Aduchte. If the floor really did have altar sanctity with regard to blood application, in other words, the floor would have been sufficient, so why didn't they, when they scooped up the blood from the floor, why didn't they just re-pour it onto the floor? You would have your human koyach, the koyach ha'adam that was just referred to. I would be pouring the blood, but onto the floor. Why was that not done? Why does it say that it was they were shoyfchi al gabi ha'mizbeach? The fact that they poured it dafka specifically onto the mizbeach shows that the floor does not have mizbeach status with regard to blood application. And that would be fine. That would be in accordance with what Rava claimed. The Gemara asks, and you can see how the form flipped up again with the narrow part upwards indicating a question. V'dilma, maybe that which was taught in the source, that the blood was scooped up and poured onto the Mizbeach, was Mishum Deboinon Mitzvah Min Muvchar, because we would like to accomplish the mitzvah in its choice way. Everyone will agree that the choice way would be to have the blood poured onto the Mizbeach. The floor was merely a contingency. However, it could very well be that the floor would be acceptable. And if the floor would be acceptable, we would be left with a challenge, we'll say, to that which Rava claimed. And the fact that the source indicated the pouring on the Mizbeach, that was only because that would be the best way, but not to the exclusion of the floor as being a means for kiyum, of fulfilling blood application. As you can see, we have a slash mark at this point, indicating that which follows is a new point. Before we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading to the outside margin. You can see a Nose heading under the volcano forms. It says, the Nose, new topic, Mizbeach Shenifgam, a Mizbeach that became chipped. Ein Oichlin Bishviloi Kotchen, because of it, one cannot eat the sacrifices. We will also see a double underline use, which is one of our series markings. So that's explained, Dugmois shel hakodshim benosei hanal, the different examples of different forms of sacrifice that were just mentioned in the topic. The topic being that a mizbeach that's chipped is a results in the restriction of eating sacrifices, different kinds of sacrifices. We will feature, if you skim ahead with the double underlines, we have Shiore Mincha, and you have Kotshe Kotshim, and Kotshim Kalim. You have the meal offerings, after the handful is taken off, the koimetz is taken off and put on the Mizbeach, the Shirayim, that which is left, is eaten by the Kohanim, but if the Mizbeach is chipped, so they cannot eat the Shiore Mincha. And Kotshe Kotshim, those are the high-level sacrifices. Even though, technically speaking, Menachos are also classified as Kotshe Kotshim, since the Pasuk that's cited is a reference specifically to Mincha, the Gemara wants to know about other kinds of Kotshe Kotshim, high-level sanctity korbanos, that there is a restriction of eating them in the event that the Mizbeach is chipped. The Gemara then will inquire, what about Kotshim Kalim? How do we know that there is a similar restriction with regard to those kind of sacrifices, the lower level sanctity sacrifices, which includes things like a Korban Shlomim? As we note before reading the Gemara, we do have a Roman numeral number 2 in the little space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. This is really a numbering that started back on Nun Tes Omid Aleph, where there was a feature of another halacha concerning a Mizbeach Shenifgam. But for our purposes, this represents a new point. Omar Rebbe Elazar, continuing in the Gemara, Mizbeach Shenifgam ein oichlin begino. Begino means bishvilo, or because of it. If a Mizbeach is chipped, as a result of that, we do not eat shiore mincha kehanim, will not be able to eat their portion that they received in a meal offering. Shenemar, the posuk says, v'ichluha matzois etzel ha-mizbeach. That's the posuk. V'chi etzel mizbeach achluha, is it so that they ate the shiore mincha specifically next to the altar? That's not so. So how are we to understand this pasuk? We just might mention that the shiore mincha were eaten in the Azorah, being that they had a high level sanctity status, but even though they were eaten in the Azorah, they weren't eaten specifically next to the Mizbeach. So what does this pasuk convey? Elo bizman shehu shalem, velo bizman shehu choser. They can be eaten when the Mizbeach is complete, namely in full repair, not chipped. And not when it's choser, when it's missing, when it's lacking, when it's chipped. Ashkechon shiore mincha, as far as we're concerned, we have found a source for that, for the shiore mincha being subject to this restriction. Kotche kotchim in olam, from where do I know that the same restriction applies to the eating of kotche kotchim? Tamad lomar, kodesh kodashim. The pasuk says over there, kodesh kodashim. We're referring, of course, to this pasuk in Vayikra, Perek Yud, pasuk Yud Beis, and we have a citation of that pasuk that we've included on the inside margin. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's read the pasuk. It says, "Vayidaber Moshe el Aaron ve'el Elozer ve'el Yisomer bonav hanoisarim." Moshe addressed Aaron and his remaining sons. "Klu es hamincha hanoiseres meishe Hashem ve'ichlua matzis etzel hamizbeach." Take the meal offering and eat it. Eitzel hamizbeach ki kodesh kodashim hi. So in that pasuk you see the expression kodesh kodashim, indicating that just like we explained, we interpreted eitzel hamizbeach to mean when the mizbeach is complete, so too with regard to those kind of sacrifices classified as kodshei kodshim. That includes a korban chatos, a korban osham, which were high-level sanctity korbanos. There are, of course, other examples, as we've learned in previous Mishnayos. Kotshim kalim minayin, what about low-level sanctity korbanos, which includes things like a korban shlomim, a korban toda, korban pesach? How do we know, regarding them also, that you have this restriction? Omar Abaye, asyo midrasha. The Rabbi Yossi. It comes through Rabbi Yossi's exposition. The Sanya. We have a Tanaic source that will take us a number of lines down Omid Beis, and in this Tanaic source we will see a reference to Kodshim Kalim also being subject to this restriction of not being eaten when the Mizbeach is chipped. Rabbi Yossi Omer Shloisha Dvorim Mishum Shloisha Zakenim V'zeh Echad Mehem. Rabbi Yossi said over 3 points of law in the name of 3 different sages, and the following is one of those points. Where the Gemara here in this Tanaic source will not deal with all 3 citations, but one of them is as follows. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Yochol Yale Odom Meiser Sheni V'Yushalayim V'Yochlenu B'Zman Azeh. Rashi points out that there is a given over here, that he holds that the sanctity of the land of Israel has not been voided. That even though Klal Yisrael has experienced temple destruction and exile, the land maintains its sanctity. Sanctity is something, is a phenomenon that affects the produce grown in the land. The produce that's grown in Eretz Yisrael that has Kedushas Haaretz requires tithing. Amongst the different tithes that were taken was something called Meiser Sheni. Meiser Sheni is 1/10 of one's produce that one would separate and take the fruit to Yerushalayim and eat the fruit within the boundaries of the walls of Yerushalayim. Of course, if one couldn't take all his fruit, he had the option of redeeming, of doing pidyon, transferring the sanctity from the fruit onto money, and then taking the money to Yerushalayim and buying food items there and eating it. The question that's raised by, that's presented here, is could a person, bizman hazeh, take his maaser sheni, which according to the approach we just suggested, requires to be tithed, can he take the fruits themselves to Yerushalayim, bizman hazeh, nowadays, and eat them without having done any previous redemption? In other words, we're talking about fruit that has Kedushas Maaser Sheni. Before we go further, let's just glance to the side of our Gemara. We have a tatnose, a subtopic heading, and we've written in there Bechor u'Maaser. Bechor is a firstborn male animal. It's given to Kehanim and brought as a sacrifice. A Bechor animal and a Maaser Sheni fruit. Yochel Yalev Yochelim Yerushalayim Bizman Hazeh. Could one bring them to Yerushalayim nowadays and eat them there? So at this point in the Gemara, we've also dashed, underlined this sentence in order to focus our attention on the on this particular topic, namely the Maaser Sheni Yerushalayim Bizman Hazeh, assuming, of course, or using the assumption that we're talking about an opinion that holds Kedushas Haaretz was lo botla, that there is sanctity to the fruits themselves. Can one take them and eat them in Yerushalayim? V'din hu? Well, through logic, we should be able to conclude. Bechor to'un havo asmokam, u'maiser to'un havo asmokam. The Bechor, the firstborn animal, being that it is a sacrifice, it requires being brought to the place, namely to, in the case of the Bechor, it's being brought to the Beis HaMikdash. Maaser also requires being brought to Yerushalayim. Ma Bechor eino elo b'fnei abayis, just like the Bechor is something that applies, we could say is brought as a sacrifice only in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. One has to be very careful when we talk about something applying. There is a concept of Kedushas Bechor even without the Beis HaMikdash, but in terms of how it's to be processed in the optimum way, the proper way, it requires being brought to the Beis HaMikdash as a sacrifice. So just like the Bechor requires what's called Havoas Mokom, Af Maaser Eino Ela B'fnei Abayis, let's go over this point again. Just like the Bechor is not brought unless there is a Beis HaMikdash, Af Maaser Eino Ela B'fnei Abayis, so too the Maaser Sheni, it's being brought and eaten in Yerushalayim is so only if there is a Beis HaMikdash. As a result of this, at this point, we would then have a response to the question. The question was, could I bring fruits, Maaser Sheni fruits to Yerushalayim nowadays and eat them there? Eat them there in their sanctity, namely without any redemption, without transferring to the Kedusha off of the fruits. Can I bring the original fruits with their Kedusha to Yerushalayim? The answer is no, because I'm learning from Bechor. The Brisa suggests maybe not. Ma le Bechor, shekein ton matan domen ve'mum negabi mizbeach. It might be that Bechor is different, that it's requirement of Bifnei HaBayis is because it really needs, it requires blood sprinkling and innards offering on an altar, which is not the case by Maaser Sheni. That's just, it's a mere consideration of eating fruits, which is not blood related. The Gemara says back, well, Bikurim Yochichu. Let Bikurim then prove or resolve our question. Bikurim is a reference to the first fruits that blossom. Those first fruits are given to the Kohanim, and they are then brought to the, they're presented to the Kohanim, and they are placed on the floor of the Azorah next to the Mizbeach. The Bikurim are, as being fruits, there's no blood involved, and yet Bikurim require the Beis HaMikdash. So just like the Bikurim require Havoas Mokom and a Beis HaMikdash, so too the Maaser. The Gemara, the Brisa responds, Ma'al Bikurim, I can't learn from Bikurim to Meiser, Shekein Tun and Hanocha. Bikurim have an additional requirement of being placed, Hanocha is being placed next to the Mizbeach. That's not the case with regard to Meiser Sheni. Meiser Sheni, in its heyday, never required anything of that sort. All it required was being brought into the walls of Yerushalayim. So being that Meiser Sheni is not like Bikurim, there's still room to suggest that the Meiser Sheni fruits could be brought to Yerushalayim, even Bizman Azeh. Therefore, the Brisa responds with a pasuk. Talmud Lomar, Vehavesem Shoma Oiloi Sechem, the Vechule is a continuation of the pasuk, which includes a reference to Ma'asrois as well. Makish Meiser Lebechor. In this pasuk, there is a comparison, a scriptural comparison, because we're not seeing the entire pasuk quoted over here in the text of the Gemara, but it goes on to mention Maestros and Bechoros and the firstborn animals, and therefore in the pasuk you have Makish, a comparison, Meiser LeBechor, a comparison between Meiser and Bechor. Ma Bechor Eino Elo Bifnei HaBayis, just like the Bechor necessitates having the Beis HaMikdash, Af Meiser Eino Elo Bifnei HaBayis. So too, the eating of Meiser Sheni fruits in Shulayim is not to be done Bizman Hazeh. If we back up a couple lines in this source, the source had said, after showing that you cannot learn from Bechor, maybe we should be able to learn from Bikurim. Just like Bikurim does not apply Bizman Hazeh, so too we said the Meiser Sheni would not apply Bizman Hazeh. Then the source rejected the attempt to learn from Bikurim based on the fact that Bikurim had a special feature. They needed to be placed next to the Mizbeach, which is not something that you find by Meiser Sheni. At that point, the Brisa could have said, okay, I'm not going to learn from Bikurim because it has Anocha. Maybe I should then learn from Bechor. Bechor doesn't have a placing stage to it. It's offered as a sacrifice. But then we said previously that you can't learn from Bechor either because it has Matan Domim. Generally speaking, in Tanaic literature, when you run into a situation like that, we say, okay, each one has a special feature to it, preventing me to learn from it to the unknown item, in this case the Meiser Sheni, but could I not create a combination between Bechor and Bikurim? And if I do create this combination, I wouldn't need the Pasuk. I could simply say, just like the Bechor and Bikurim have Havoas Mokom, need to be brought to, in their case, to the Beis HaMikdash, and do not apply Bizman Hazeh. Likewise, Meiser Sheni, which also has an element of Havoas Mokom being brought to a place, Yerushalayim, it too is not Noeg Bizman Hazeh. Why then does the Brisa need to cite a Pasuk when I could have, through logic, created a common denominator between Bechor and Bikurim? That's the Gemara's question, presented very succinctly. V'ne'ah der dino, v'nesi b'mahatzad. This expression is exactly what we explained before. Create a common denominator between Bikurim and Bechor, and conclude Meiser Sheni from them, through a mahatzad, a common denominator between Bechor and Bikurim. The Gemara answers that two really had no chance of operating, mishum te'ikol le'mifrach, because one could have rejected that approach as follows. Ma lahatzad asheva shebahen, how can you learn from a common denominator between Bechor and Bikurim to Meiser Sheni shekein yesh bohen tzad mizbeach? Bechor and Bikurim both have an element of requiring an altar. In the case of Bechor, an altar for blood application. In the case of Bikurim, an altar for being placed next to. The first fruits were placed next to it, which is not the case by the Meiser Sheni. The Meiser Sheni has no altar association. Therefore, in order to establish that the Meiser Sheni is not to be brought Bizman Hazeh to Yerushalayim, we had to fall back onto the verse. The Gemara continues with its analysis of this topic and asks, as far as this Tana is concerned, it seemed that the Bechor was an obvious point, that it is not noheg bismanazeh, and the meiser was not as obvious. So we're going to be asking, as far as this Tana is concerned, what was it, or what element makes it such that Bechor is obvious, more obvious than the issue of the Meiser Sheni? My Kosova, what does he hold? We see the use of triangles here to help delineate the stages of analysis. This is indicated by our Mivneh heading in the outside margin, where you see the triangle featured, and we have an explanation of Shlavim, stages in the analysis of what the Tana holds. I kosovar kedusha rishonu kitchel eshaita vekitchelos lavoi. If it's such that the original sanctity imposed on the Beis Hamikdash was permanent. It was initially imposed, and kitchelos lavo, meaning a permanent sanctity, afilu bechor nami. Even a bechor, one should be able to bring and offer as a sacrifice and eat it. Rashi points out, afilu bechor nami, afilu bechor yakriv yochal. A bechor could even be brought bizman hazeh and eaten. To all man the islay kitchel le'osu lavo, the opinion that holds that the original sanctity that was imposed is of a permanent, everlasting nature, islay shemakriven, he also holds that you can offer sacrifices afal pishein bias, even if there is no actual holy temple, Kedamrim b'Megillah, as the Gemara in Maseches Megillah points out. Continuing in the Gemara, v'i kosavar lo kitchil osid lavo, if the Tana above holds that the sanctity accorded to the Beis HaMikdash was not of a permanent nature, and hence when the destruction took place, that sanctity departs, afilu b'chor nami tiboi, then the issue concerning the Bechorish could have also been raised as a question. When we say the issue of Bechor could have also been raised as a question, well, what question? If you say that the Kedusha was not permanent, then there, obviously one could not offer it as a sacrifice. So what question would you even start off with? Rashi points out. Let's look at the Rashi. We have a little star in helping you to find the Rashi we want to make immediate reference to. Afilu b'chor ki agav nanami tiboy le kagon she zorku domov v'korav emurav v'chorav abayis. This would be a one point in history question, where the b'chor was actually sacrificed and blood applications took place while the temple was still built. U'besoro kayom. Then the Bechor, this theoretical Bechor, would have been offered with its blood sprinklings, then the temple was destroyed, and now I have meat still around on the very day that the temple was destroyed, once again where the Bechor had been offered under optimum circumstances, but the meat remained. Mahu shiochluhu, can that meat be eaten? So that's the question of the Gemara. That if you hold that the original Kedusha was not permanent, why are you asking merely concerning the Meiser Sheni and its ability or allowance to be eaten? You could have asked the same question regarding the eating of the meat of the Bechor. Omar Ravina, the Gemara continues, the Oilam Kosavar Lo Kitcha. The Tana holds that the sanctity accorded to the Beis HaMikdash and Yerushalayim, the original sanctity, was not of a permanent nature. The Hocha B'mayaskinan, the case concerning the Bechor that seems to be obvious to the Tana, concerns the following. B'vechor she nizrak domo kodem korban abayis, like we saw in the Rashi, the Bechor blood was sprinkled before the temple was destroyed, v'chorav habayis, and on that very same day the temple was destroyed, v'adayin besoro kayam, and you're left, and you have the meat. The meat is still around. The meat of the bechor. Apparently, they were able to run out of the flaming Beis Hamikdash with the meat of the bechor. V'iskash besoro ledomo. And once again, with regard to the Bechor, we have to bear in mind that the issue of the Bechor was obvious, that the meat could not be eaten. And the question is, why is the Bechor so obvious? So we're explaining that right now. The meat, the iskash besoro, ledomo, the meat, or the halachic requirements regarding the meat, are compared to the issue concerning its blood. Ma domo b'mizbeach, just like the blood of the korban Bechor, of the Bechor sacrifice, requires the mizbeach. Af besoro b'mizbeach, so too, the allowance of eating the meat requires the presence of an altar. And as a result of that hekish between the boser and the dam, it was obvious to the Tana that the bechor b'zman hazeh could not be eaten. The question the Tana raised was, what about Meiser Sheni? Meiser Sheni, which does not have blood requirements, what about eating the fruits in Yerushalayim? So to that, the Tana answers, V'asi Meiser V'yolef B'mibichor. The issue concerning Meiser was derived through a hekish in the Pasuk between Meiser and Bechor. The Gemara asks a question that's premised on Gemaras that we've learned already in Zvochim, in our previous Shiurim. The Gemara asks, V'chidover halome behekish chozer malami behekish, can something that was derived through a hekish, in this case, the meat of the Bechor was derived through it being compared to the blood of the Bechor, can the meat now turn around and serve as a source for additional information? Being that the meat itself was derived information, can it turn around and teach me concerning some new information? And we know that in the realm of Kochim, when you're learning about issues concerning korbonus, we do not do this. That's called lomed min halomed. Derived information cannot serve to be a source for new information. Of course, what we're saying, and we're speaking in very superficial terms, we can focus our discussion to something learned from a hekish and its basic inability to teach me to a third topic through a hekish. So how can you do that over here? How can you learn the issue of the Meiser Sheni from the meat of Bechor when the meat of Bechor itself was derived from the blood of the Bechor? Meaning, when we say derived, mean legally derived. Just like the blood of the Bechor required the Mizbeach, so too the meat requires the Mizbeach. The Gemara answers, Meiser Dogon, the issue concerning Meiser Sheni, the tithe that of fruits that we have been discussing, Hulin Hu, that's not considered Kochim. And since it's considered Hulin, mundane, the common material, there is no restriction of Dover Halomei Behekesh, Choyzer Malamei Behekesh. So I'm able to derive information concerning the Meiser Sheni from the Bechor. The Gemara says, well, that's all fine and good. That works out well if you focus on the derived information. If you define the topic by the derived information, I can classify this as hulin, as non-kochim. And being that the derived information, the lomeid, is meiser sheni, I have a right to classify it as hulin, and hence I'd be allowed to use this method of determination. But if you say that we classify discussions based on sources, malamed, in this case the malamed, the source of the information, the teacher of the information, was the Bechor. The Bechor is kochim. So, my equal member, what is there to say? How can I use this method of deriving information, namely, dover halomid behekish? Since we're in the realm of Kochim, being that you say we go Bosser Malameid, well, Ein Choser Umalameid Behekish. The Gemara answers, Dam Ubosser Chado Milsahi. The meat and the blood of the Bechor is really one entity. It comes from the same, it's from the same creature. As such, you don't have a two-stage limud. We are not going to say that the meat was derived from the dam and then turns around to teach me concerning the Maiser Sheni, but rather the meat and the dam is viewed as one entity, and we are simply saying that the Maiser Sheni is compared to the Bechor. In a one-stage fashion, that's quite all right. Kisolik Ravin Omra L'Shmaitza Kamei de Rabbi Yirmiyah. When Ravin came to Eretz Yisrael, he said over the teaching of Abaye that Kodshem Kalim are rendered unfit through the Mizbeach becoming chipped. And he proved that from the Drosha of Rabbi Yossi. In the Drosha above, concerning the Bechor, we saw that if the Mizbeach was no longer there, so the meat became pusel. We really should have mentioned this much earlier in the in our limud, but that was really the main point, that the bosar was nifsal. This point and derivation from Rabbi Yossi's teaching that the bosar of kodshim kalim, like a bechor, is nifsal through pegimas hamizbeach, was said over to Rabbi Yirmiyah. Omar, Rabbi Yirmiyah responded with a point. This is a long point. You can see we have a nun that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara with a vertical dashed line. Before we go on in the Gemara, let's take a look at our topic heading that we have on the outside margin. We have this called a nosei hemshech, a continuation of the topic. Ta'anosam shel Rabbi Yirmiyah, the claims of Rabbi Yirmiyah, the ein lifshot shekotshim kalim nifsolim b'vkimas hamizbeach, one should not conclude, says Rabbi Yirmiyah, that kotshim kalim are rendered unfit through the chipping of the mizbeach. Me'achar deroyim Litanoso, since we will see according to his claim, Dafilu im nistalek hamizbeach legamri lo nifsalu kodshim kalim. We will see that, according to Rabbi Yirmiyah's approach, that even if the mizbeach was completely removed, kodshim kalim are not rendered unfit. So we turn to the Gemara. Omar, Rabbi Yirmiyah, upon hearing the drosha before brought in by Abaye. Abaye's name was featured on the bottom part of Omer Aleph. He's the one that brought in Rabbi Yossi to prove this whole point concerning kodshim kalim being nifsal b'pegimas hamizbeach. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, Bavloi tipshoi, literally means the foolish Babylonians, and he's referring to the Talmidei Chachamim that lived in Bovel. Amtul diyasvi bi'aro dechashucha amri shmaitze demechshecha. Since they live in a dark land, they say dark teachings. He's a rather derisive comment regarding the teaching of Abaye. He says as follows, lo shmiya lehu hodesanyo, did they not hear the following brisa? The brisa, you can see, is a two-line source. What we are going to see in this piece of Gemara are really two sources that are quoted, and we've numbered them 1 and 2. We'll make reference to these numbers later on. But you have these two sources, and they seem to be at odds with one another, and the resolution of these two sources will actually be Rabbi Yirmiyah's point, from which we will see that kodshim kalim are not nifsal, even with the total removal of the Mizbeach, not to say anything about a merely chipped Mizbeach. So the Gemara continues with Rav Yirmiyah's question or wonderment, did they not hear the following Hodesanya, Bishas Siluk Masos, when the Jews in the desert, when they left Mitzrayim, they had a Mishkan, when they uprooted camp and started to travel. That's called Shas Siluk Masos. kodshim nifsalim, sacrifices that had been sacrificed are become unfit. V'zavim umitzoroyim mishtalchim chutz lemechitza. And these are different kinds of tomei individuals. Zav. A zav is a type of tumah that is not allowed in the Levite camp, the Machne Leviyah, and certainly not in the Machne Shechina, which is where the Mishkan is generally located. And Mitzoroyim are a more severe form of tumah. They're not allowed to be even in the camp of Israel, in the Machne Yisrael. Something interesting is being described over here. You have the entire camp being uprooted. The Jews in the Midbar traveled in formation. This is all described in Psukim in the Torah. They traveled in formation. So as they're traveling, it says here that the Kodshim are rendered unfit, and Zoven and Mitzoroyim are sent out of their respective precincts. V'tanya idach, there's another source that says, B'shnei mekoimois kodshim ne'echolim. Rashi explains, B'shnei mekoimois ne'echolim, chad b'mekomon, b'machnos amrois bohen kishamishkan b'mekomo. One place is in their respective precincts when the Mishkan is constructed or is set up. The chad b'chol mokoim shiehei shom derech halichoson mishenosu. The second idea the second place is while traveling, kodshim are ne'echolim. Well, this would appear at first glance to be a contradiction, because source number one you said, b'shas siluk masos, kodshim are nifsolim, and here you're saying that the kodshim are ne'echolim. My love, what must be the resolution? Notice, of course, you have a diamond here. On the outside margin, we feature an explanation of the diamonds. Are drochim liashef astira ben shnei hamikoros binyan achilus kodshim b'shas siluk masos, an attempt to resolve the seeming contradiction between the two sources regarding the consumption, the eating of sacrifices while in travel. Travel meaning in the midbar, while they were traveling. So Rabbi Yirmiyah concludes his point by saying, my lav, is it not so that we resolve these two sources by saying, ha b'kodshei kodshim, ha b'kodshim kalim? The type of kodshim that becomes nifsal, that's a reference to the high-level sanctity sacrifices. However, the low-level sanctity sacrifices, the kodshim kalim, for example, including a b'chor, that would not be rendered unfit, so that even though the Mizbeach is completely uprooted, the Kodshim Kalim are not Nifsal. Certainly, if the Mizbeach was merely chipped, they would not be Nifsal, contrary to Abaye. The Gemara goes on with response, if you will, as opposed to an across-the-boards allowance for kodshim kalim. Omar Ravina. Ravina says, idi v'idi b'kodshim kalim. Both sources are referring to kodshim kalim themselves. V'lo kashya, ha Rabbi Yishmael, ha Rabbonan. Source number one, which says that they are nifsal, that's according to Rabbi Yishmael, who we saw on the upper part of Sama Hamad Beis. We saw that he learns the dinim of Bosar from Dam. So just like Dam requires the Mizbeach, and certainly not if the Mizbeach is uprooted, the Dam, the Bosar also, the meat itself, would be rendered unfit by the fact that the Mizbeach is not in position. Source number two, that doesn't learn Bosar from Dam, would conform to the Shitas of Rabbanon. And hence, that which Abaye said before, that kodshim kalim is nifsal b'pgimas ha-mizbeach, that of course conforms to Rabbi Shmuel's approach, and thereby preserving Abaye, and not necessarily yielding to the total rejection that Rabbi Yirmiyah suggested. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.